LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today's Tuesday, August 1st. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
And Rachel is always here. Can count on her every day like a Swiss watch, right?
So I've been called that before.
Really?
No.
No? Like that you're always here on time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a good thing.
You know what?
That's a good reputation to have.
Exactly. I'm trying to beat all the stoner stereotypes, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
Lazy, unmotivated, never shows up on time. Like, I'm in the real world.
There
time,
you go. You see, you show them, man. Yeah. You're an advocate for responsible smoking.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. And today, of course, we always end the show with weed, I guess, lately. Not always, but lately. And today we have awesome guests, so we're going to be joined by just a minute. There is a certain theme running through the show
lately. I'm telling you, I don't know, like when you and Tori had me on, if you guys knew what was to come.
Yeah. Well, you know? we used to talk about weed, but not as much.
Sam and Rachel was taking a little bit more of a greener approach.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. It's sort of like it goes into the primitive drives that we have.
You know, we're 420 friendly. Let's
just say that.
You know.
But every day should be 420, of course. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things like the legalization and everything that's going on in L.A. Because L.A. really has been leading the pack, you know, although our recreational is coming a little later. But still, I think we've made some breakthroughs here.
Yes, definitely. You know?
So in that aspect of it, living in a liberal state is a good thing. And
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, we couldn't do this in Texas.
Yeah, right.
I mean, not today, but hopefully one day.
Yeah. Wow. So things going on. I'm getting worried about North Korea, to be honest with you.
I told you this a week ago. I said we shouldn't be making long-term plans. We should just really be making short-term plans because we may not. Who knows?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Who knows?
But what we're forgetting is we're the biggest power in the world, okay? And the thing is, North Korea is afraid of us, and that's why they're so paranoid, you know, because nobody's on their side. They're paranoid that people are going to destroy them. And guess what? So then Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, was saying today that a military option could be used to either
eliminate North Korea.
Yeah, the missile program or North Korea itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did see that the missiles they were launching could obviously hit California and the western part
right.
of the country. And but even go as far as Boston
yeah,
and New
like
York.
Chicago.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I just, I love Korean food. I love Korean barbecue. It would be a shame to.
But that's South Korean you're probably talking about.
I don't know.
That's where we get all the Korean culture. We don't get a lot from North Korea. But at any rate, I would. Wow. I mean, to destroy a country. It sounds like something that Trump would say, right?
I know. I just feel like maybe if we all sat down for a nice meal together, perhaps, you know, some Korean barbecue, we could all hash it out.
That's true.
Talk over our differences over some bulgogi.
There's a chance
beef.
There, probably.
bulgogi yeah. bringing people
maybe
together.
Everybody just gets high and mellow out and stuff, you know? The world
honestly,
would be a much better place.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if Jeff Sessions just got high
yeah.
once.
He would mellow out a little
maybe.
Bit, right?
Maybe he would get it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just send him some brownies. Did you read about those hackers that hacked emails and sent emails as like fake Reince Priebus to Scaramucci? Did you hear about
no,
this?
No.
Oh, my
no.
God. It's genius. This
really?
Hacker, yeah, before Scaramucci was out.
Right.
sent was like able to get addresses of all of these like advisors in the White House, and he was sent just for fun. He wasn't like trying to do anything malicious other than to continue to embarrass the administration. But he actually was successful because Scaramucci replied back thinking he was like talking whoever who he was talking about or whatever. It was really funny. And I just thought, well, if that can happen, like, wow, we could definitely get Jeff Sessions an edible.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know who the Scaramucci is, but...
he was the, for 10 days...
yeah, like the communications
director. The White House communications director.
Director, right? Yeah, yeah.
If you will.
But all I could think of is...
I'm just personally glad that I can hold a job longer.
Than 10 days.
And a relationship.
Right, right.
You know?
All I can think about
and
is...
And a menstrual
Scaramucci,
cycle.
Scaramucci, will you do the fandango? That's all I can think of.
There was like, the guy with that kind of name is not going to last that long in the White House. I'm telling you. Like, it's just, they're going to find a way to kick him out.
I'm telling you, it's unbelievable, you know? And so the shit that's going on, you know, but yeah, I see something about the email prankster and stuff. So that's pretty cool, right? I mean, that he was able to do this.
I don't know if it's cool or terrifying.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's cool because... well, it's not
it's
cool.
Embarrassing.
Okay, I
it shows
agree
how
with you.
Weak our security cool. system is, and that if some punk person who literally has no ill intention other than to like embarrass right. and point out how
yeah.
weak are,
and that's the thing. That's the scary part is how vulnerable we are yeah. to attacks and
well,
hacking.
That's what we were saying, or I was. You know, they're saying in the news, like, if anything, like, now would be the perfect time for something terrible to happen. I hate to say it. Now would be the perfect time. But because we just have no leadership at all. And at all, so.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But I don't want to get to the point of that because in my lifetime, don't want to see any more wars. You know, I've been through two growing up in Israel. Yeah. And, but I never really saw any like bombs or anything, you know. But we were like in bomb shelters yeah. all the time. I was 7 years old.
That's
imagine,
crazy.
You know.
My sister went when she was bat mitzvahed in, or she was confirmed a couple years ago in right. Israel, and she took video on her cell phone of just like you could see Syria for wherever they took just like rockets
right.
going off
yeah,
like it's
right?
fireworks, you know, at 4th of July.
I know. And it's not funny either, man. I mean, people evacuate their homes. They move to different parts of the country. Imagine living yeah. like that, you know. So,
thank
but
goodness
now I'm
they
reading
have
about,
weed over there.
Yeah, yeah. But now I'm reading about the Iron Dome and how it was developed and stuff, and it's unbelievable. These are the anti-missile rockets.
Where
and
if someone were to
rockets.
Attack us, they'll shoot this
They
thing
shoot
up.
The one. So, you know, I mean, we have stuff like that, like the Patriot and stuff, but that's for longer, like the Scuds. Remember the Scuds, like, during the Persian War?
I don't remember
You
that
don't
at all.
Remember that. You were growing up then, right?
I don't know what I just I'm not like a big war person.
91. You
I
were
despite
young.
How I look, I've never been into war.
Right, right. But no, I mean, I'm saying that. So for different range of missiles, you have different missile systems or
oh, okay.
anti-missile systems.
Okay.
So what this did is it shot down about 90-95% of all the rockets that were shot.
This was
so
in Israel.
Like so that's like a game changer,
yeah.
you know? I mean, suddenly the Hamas realized, well, the rockets are not really working, you know? So, but that's for another day, man. Let's enough of war. Let's bring in our guests right now who are sitting here maybe just a little patiently, a little impatiently, agreeing with what we're saying. I want to introduce... let me just bring up the names because you know how I space out in the morning, right? Okay, well, we're joined by...
Did you have your edible this morning?
So? I did. You know I do. Every morning, you know. At the risk of alienating all the fucking listeners. But you know what? So far, I've been doing pretty well. Sometimes I forget, but, you know, even without it these days, I forget. So,
yeah.
Ruben Honig and Elizabeth Ashford, welcome to the show, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
Good morning.
You.
Are you a little slow moving this morning, Ruben?
A little slow.
A little slow. We're going to have to
tired.
Pick you up.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We're going to have to pick you up. Why? How many hours of sleep did you get last night?
How many hours?
Yeah.
Nobody's counting.
Really? Okay. So you don't sleep a lot. You work a lot?
I work a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He works a lot.
Wow. And so introduce yourselves, Elizabeth and Ruben. You guys work together, as we established before the show. Tell us what it is that you do.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay, hi. Yeah. No, hi, good morning. Nothing like a good conversation about Hamas to kick off.
Of course.
You know, our show about pot.
Of course.
There you go. Well,
and kimchi.
Yeah.
And kimchi.
Yeah, and we talk about everything.
That's I'm hungry.
You like
now.
Kimchi?
I know.
Do you like kimchi?
Of course.
Really? Do you guys?
Of course.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
I tasted it once and I almost lost my lunch. But
that's
for another day. Yeah.
But we're Jewish. We like anything pickled. It's just pickled whatever.
Fermentation is what we do.
Yeah.
Maybe you had the wrong kind.
Yeah,
no,
possible.
It was supposedly pretty good. I don't know. But at any rate,
each his own.
Yeah, exactly. So go ahead.
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Ashford, and I work with Ruben. We work together in a couple of different capacities. First and most important for your listeners is that we're on the executive board of the Los Angeles Cannabis Task Force.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's a sexy name.
I love it.
It is. I mean, task force, you think like the police or something.
Exactly. Do you guys have shirts? Like you guys should get official, intimidating shirts. Like the FBI, but like not the FBI. You know, like the opposite.
They're on their
like
way.
Like the DEA, but like branding
sure,
for you guys.
Sure, the task the force. So the task force is an organization that Ruben and our colleague Ariel Clark founded over a year ago to really try to open up the cannabis industry for licensing in the city of LA.
She's an amazing attorney.
She is an amazing attorney.
Who's that now?
Ariel Clark.
Ariel Clark.
Oh, okay.
With Clark Newbert.
Mm-hmm. All right.
She's incredible. So anyway, Ariel started the organization with Ruben. I'm sure he can give the backstory on that.
Yeah. When did that start, Ruben? When did you guys start?
About February last year.
Oh, okay. So you guys been around for a while now, over a year.
The time is flying.
Is it
a year and a half? We're getting close to a year and a half.
Do you, you don't work with a guy from Legacy, do you? Legacy Strains? Eric, is that his name? Is this a different? It's a different coalition.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's out everybody that smokes
pot. No, I know. You know Eric,
yeah. Of course.
I just ran into him because we were talking about, because I sat in on one of the meetings. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see, you know, the people behind, because I was telling him I sat in on a board meeting that was about cannabis law or whatever it was. And if you walked in, you would not think they were talking about weed.
Like regular business
people,
right?
It could be anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's how cannabis is being treated right now. We're seeing a movement towards making it like mainstream and legitimate, right? I mean, how close are we? I mean, we obviously know next year we're going to have...
January 1st.
January 1st is when recreational is going to go into effect. Mm-hmm. Do you think... I mean, we talk about recreational and stuff, but there's still a lot of obstacles, right? I mean, it's not like you're going to be able to go to a coffee shop like in Amsterdam and smoke, right? Or can you?
I think we're going to get there eventually. I think, you know, there are... more progressive cities. There, cities have a lot of control over what they want to license and how they want it to look, how they want the industry to look. So, you know, you look at a city like West Hollywood, right? You would think that there would be
something
like that. But then you have the city of Los Angeles that eventually will have something like that. But again, there's so much more to regulate it. It's such a big city,
right?
So I think you need to really start with the fundamentals first and build your way towards it. But I think that's the direction that we're going.
That's very cool. So, and we'll get there in our generation, right? Hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get there this coming year. I mean, you know, the real challenge in California is that the way that government decided to regulate this was giving every city and every county the opportunity to come up with their own rules, and then the state came up with its own rules.
Yeah.
It's just so complex.
So, just to confuse everybody pretty much.
Yeah.
Why do you think that happened? Why did they do it like this? Is this because they've never done anything like this before, Ruben?
I think that it's... So, in California, there has been a medical cannabis program since 1996. It's the longest program in the country. However, it's been largely unregulated. There hasn't necessarily been a licensing structure. Businesses haven't been necessarily protected.
Right.
And I think another issue is that you're dealing with a state that's the sixth largest economy in the world. you're dealing with a state that might as well be a country, and the city of Los Angeles might as well be a state itself. I mean, the revenue from cannabis is greater in the city of Los Angeles and just the city than all of Colorado. Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at...
And that's before recreation.
That's before recreation. Extraordinary. Just with medical, right? The demand for this is unbelievable. I mean, you know, if nothing else, this should be a signal to the federal government. It's like, what's the point anymore? You know, why make it so difficult? Do you guys, I mean, what, Elizabeth, why is the federal government holding on to not even reclassifying marijuana?
Big pharma and alcohol and tobacco industry. Probably special interests. So they all lobby and
I don't know, you're the expert.
That's just what I think.
I mean, look, I think it's a combination of things. I think it's absolutely the influence of major industry. I think there's still a lot of debate over what the actual effects of reclassification would be like for the industry. Could end up in massive consolidation under, you know, large companies if it's reclassified. Right. I also just think, you know, California is always ahead of the rest of the country. So our attitudes here, you know, they are not indicative of how, you know, decision makers in D.C. see things. Yeah. There's a lot of reefer madness, rhetoric.
But there's also not, like, Roger Stone, who is a huge Republican.
Right.
I
read
support.
His book, by the way.
He
yeah.
is, mm-hmm. like, there's people on both sides. It's not just, like, a Republican or a Democrat thing. I mean, like, there are people on both sides of the aisle who see the benefit of, you know, like, there's a senator in Nevada named Tix Siegerbloom. They call him Toke Siegerbloom. Like, that's his nickname. I mean, we have people in government who are pro-cannabis who want to see, you know, it change. And
right.
It's, yeah. I that's
it's
why
a
I...
generation.
Well, I just think that they're, like... Out, like marijuana, cannabis would replace so many different industries. I mean, I personally think so. I think like a lot of pharmaceuticals would just be obsolete if weed became legal. And there's people pouring a lot of money into this, into making sure it doesn't become legal.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I worked in government for a long, long time. And I tend to always shy away from anything that sounds conspiratorial, not because I don't think there's merit to it, but because I don't think government's that organized for the most part. I think it's a bit haphazard. Yeah. I do agree. I think that it's definitely not a Dem versus Republican mm-hmm. issue. I think it's kind of generational in the same way like gay marriage used to be.
But it's so weird because like
now it's the norm.
Right. But like it's true because like my parents grew up in the 60s and the 70s. Like my dad's from Southern California. Both of my parents are politicians out in Vegas. So, nice. But it's weird because like their stance on it is so different, but they came from a time that was like the original pot smoke. I mean, they were smoking weed before it was like a thing to like before it was cool.
I know, but they were straight.
But that's what it is like the war on drugs was a huge propaganda, you know, machine that preached how bad, especially weed, was.
Right, right.
And how bad you are for smoking. I think there's just a lack of education. There's not because the government, you know, hasn't want to put money into being, you know, that much money into being tested or whatever.
Right.
There's not a lot of like there is now. It's slowly starting to come out. There's education behind what does CBD do? What are the benefits of THC? Like that's why people. When I worked at the dispensary, you see this like I saw a huge. Persian community come in not because they want to smoke weed, but they need access to medicine that isn't, you know, pharmaceuticals.
Right.
And that's they're learning about it through their doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and where are they getting the information? They're obviously getting it from somewhere.
I guess I would, you know, the other perspective, and I know Ruben spends, you know, 15 hours a day working on this, is that even when government is educated, even when voters say they want something, LA is a great example of how that does not necessarily translate into licensing and regulation in a way that even voters have demanded.
Yeah. Why is that, Ruben? I mean, why can't they get organized in the city as far as like ordinances and regulations and so forth?
Yeah, I think that we still, even though in November, on November 8th, Prop 64, the ALMA passed for recreational use, I still think that, and you can see it throughout the state and throughout the country, and it resonates, you know, through everywhere, that we still have this prohibitionist kind of attitude still. You know, the perception is still, it's still risky. It's still risky to kind of go on the line and, you know, you know, council members, politicians, people don't necessarily want to alienate, you know, their voters. They don't, it's not fully there yet. But also, you know, I come from a patient perspective, last time I was here, I actually moved to California as a patient to have access to cannabis for an autoimmune disorder, and it ended up going away. So I wanted to go
back. Do you believe that? Unbelievable, huh? Go on.
So I wanted to, you know, once you meet someone or a family member has a child or someone is really affected by cannabis, I don't see how they can kind of not get on board. I think it's something that's going to take time.
Right.
I wish it would speed up.
Yeah. Right.
Like yesterday.
But it's happening. Like I was saying, my mom has never smoked weed in her life, and she uses lotion on her feet to fall asleep. Like she has now, because she had no idea. She was taking pills to fall asleep, whatever she was doing. Now she doesn't have to take those. I mean, it's like things like that. That's why I think it's important to, you know, to like for me to be that, to be a face for people who, you know, and realize like you don't just have to smoke a joint.
Yeah, right.
To smoke weed, like, and it's not about smoking weed. Cannabis consumption is a personal, you know, it's very personal, and it's not, you know, there are different ways to consume it. And I always tell people, because I'm a medical patient myself, I use it for anxiety and depression. I was on pharmaceuticals my whole life until I was 24. And now I don't take anything. I just work out and smoke weed, you know. And but it is purely, it's been, you know, it's medical for me. It's not recreational or whatever. And, you know, people need to realize that there are other ways to, it's purely, you have to approach it medically.
Right.
It is
a
medicine.
And you gotta have a different perspective on it. You can't keep coming back from the point of, oh, this is just drugs to get high on.
But that's also the media and the images that are put out there, which is a lot of what, you know, which is the media as well. Because think about it, people like me, I was afraid to put my face out there as someone who consumed cannabis when I started my weed account or whatever,
right?
Because it wasn't recreational legal here and in Vegas, and I didn't want to do anything that could put my parents at risk,
right?
Because they're involved politically. But as you know, the laws change. It's like I felt like I have a responsibility as someone who, if you saw me off the street, may not look like they smoke weed or consume cannabis or whatever, to be, you know, put yourself out there. Like we have to have people in positions like you and politicians who are willing to put themselves out there to help, you know, at risk of, so people can get educated. I mean, simply just an education. I really think it's just like education. Mm-hmm. The media needs, that's why, like, when I work with Olivia, we try to put an educational twist on the content that we put out there. It's not just girls smoking weed.
Right.
You have to.
Yeah. Although there's nothing wrong with that either, you know.
There's not, but it doesn't, if you're an advocate, you have to realize, right, like, images like that don't necessarily help the cause.
That's true. But people have to understand also there's different uses and there's different lifestyles and there's nothing wrong with it, you know. Now, Elizabeth, how did you become involved in this? What were you doing before?
You know, I worked for a number of politicians and leaders in California. I was with Governor Schwarzenegger and Governor Brown. I was Kamala Harris's chief of staff.
Love her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
So you were on both sides of the aisle.
I saw a lot of the impacts of really draconian sentencing on prisons. Mm. I spent time with the Department of Justice for California. You know, really saw this continuum between, you know, how, you know, poor people are oppressed, how sentencing impacts that, and how that really impacts the whole system. And so, you know, when I came out of politics and, you know, we saw Governor Brown sign the Medical Cannabis Act that, you know, gave a structure for medical, I decided, you know, this is an important emerging market. I'm a fourth generation. My daughter's a fifth generation Californian. I'm super invested in the success of the state. And I thought this is a super important issue. And fortunately, I met Ruben.
How did you guys meet, Ruben? How did you guys meet?
We bumped into each other in the street.
Really?
No, just kidding. We didn't. We, through people that we were working with, Elizabeth had a relationship with with a lady, Laura Braden, who does amazing communications work, and she was working with us with the task force, and she took a different job, and actually Elizabeth was a good friend of hers and introduced us, and it's been a match made in heaven ever since.
Wow. Yeah.
Very cool. So you guys put your minds together and you decided we're going to run with this thing, mm-hmm. and actually make a difference. So you guys are like the task force for Los Angeles. So is that really your scope? You only focus on the city? Or do you sometimes, does it have to spill into the state level too?
Mm-hmm. Well, nothing that happens in LA doesn't impact the state. And I think one of the most important things for people to remember about the local regulations here is that if they don't work in LA, the whole state system won't work. Because that's the size of the market here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So...
yeah, there's businesses that are already concerned about the city of Los Angeles. Are they going to be able to sell their products in LA? You know, a lot of their revenue, it comes from the market in Los Angeles. And then, you know, if there is, you know, moving forward, bad public policy in the city of Los Angeles, then other cities look at it and
exactly.
they say, you know what, maybe we're going to follow LA, and mm-hmm. then it turns into a cluster F.
Yeah, that's true, right?
To put it politely.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. So it's amazing to me, though, that, you know, you live in a city with 4 million people, right? Okay, so how many people really make the decisions here in City Hall? Is it how many? They sit like in a committee, right?
Well, let's just start, though, with the basis.
Let's do the math.
80, okay. 80% of LA voters supported Measure M.
Really? 80%?
Now, just to put this in context... you cannot get 80% of people in a room to agree on something.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
If 80%, the sky is blue, right? The sky is blue. Right. You know,
that's four out of five
still
people.
Still going to be a higher percentage right. of people who disagree with
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Right. So that, I mean, those should be the decision makers, right? But kicking over to City Hall, you know, who the major players yeah. right now,
Wesson. Council President Wesson, I mean, but ultimately, LA is so big, there's 15 council members, 15 districts. Each district is like a city in itself.
I know, it's nuts.
You have, you know, the mayor, then you have city staff, employees, the city attorney's office. There's so many people that have their hand in it.
How complex, wow.
But
yeah.
the council president, Wes, in his office has taken the lead on it. And there are some offices, other offices that are leading as well. And then there are a lot of offices that don't necessarily or haven't wanted to touch it. And now they're slowly or quickly but surely getting more involved because, you know, they need to deal with what's going to affect their districts. And now we're getting closer and closer to the end of the year, and, right. and this is becoming it's a reality. You can't put it off anymore.
Yeah, right. And I think it takes someone prominent to actually, you know, come out and endorse it or whatever. And then it's going to be like, you know, all the dams are going to break, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and that's what's going to happen because at this point there's still resistance. But obviously, I mean, 4 out of 5 people wanting this,
right?
That's
a mandate.
And I'm not surprised to hear these stats because when you go to dispensaries, the demand is amazing. When you go to the events, you know, I went to the Cannabis Cup. I mean, you can't even get in. You can't even get close to where the event is. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, we need shit like this. You know, we really do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a demand for it. And I remember going there, and then you get to smoke with other people, but still you need your recommendation and all this. And hopefully one day we'll be able to. Well, I know at least, and that's a funny thing I wanted to talk to you about. We're talking about the city level. When I went to San Francisco, you sit there in the park and you smoke. And there's cops walking right by you,
they don't
say anything. Mm-hmm. And we're in the same state.
They don't care.
Right.
Well,
they don't want to fill out that paperwork.
Right, and they sell to each other.
You know what I mean? They want to be. They don't. Exactly. No one wants to be the officers. Like, I caught this guy, this dude smoking weed on the street, and the guy's
right.
like, "Well, I caught 10 gangbangers." Like,
right.
who is gonna get the better pat on the back?
I know.
Well, and police pensions are not going to pay for themselves.
Right.
Right. So tax revenue coming in from this is super important to cities.
And super so gigantic.
Did you
too,
guys?
Right?
You guys obviously saw they ran out of weed in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
like 4 days.
Yeah.
And Colorado, what, $1 billion?
Yeah.
Or was it just Denver alone? I don't know. $1 billion last year in Colorado.
Exactly.
Do they have a number of how much revenue they anticipate recreation will bring to the state? Or
last I heard, it was like 17. I don't. I
17 think, I think billion just, dollars a year
in California. Or maybe that's the country, or I just keeps it keeps escalating.
I don't know. I wish I
because the best part is like you're gonna get the people who never wanted to get a rec or whatever for their job or what. You're gonna get those people. Then you're gonna get people who've never tried weed before in their lives. You know, right. And now that they there's no you know
and tourists
and tourism. Yeah. I mean, Vegas is now like Amsterdam of the West. Right. I mean, who thought bringing weed to Vegas?
Right? Who would have
I think
thought?
It's great. I think it's great, and it belongs there.
It belongs like, you know there. What I mean? It's Sin City, you know? That's how Amsterdam
Let's fight
is.
More smiles.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
There you go. But we're definitely making progress in our lifetime, and that's encouraging, right?
We are. We're making progress, but and it's not easy, though. It takes a lot of people, and that's what's great, and that's what I love about the LA Cannabis Task Force, because myself, Elizabeth, one person is not enough.
You need
the majority. You need not just the entire industry, but you need citizens. You need
people who don't even smoke weed but still support the cause, because there you will meet a lot of people who are like, I don't consume, but I don't care if you do, because they recognize it's medical.
Absolutely.
And it's about freedom, too.
Right,
you know?
Personal freedom.
And,
exactly.
And in the U.S., you know, where we do relatively, relative to other places in the world, we have a lot of freedom. To take this away from us, and for generations, I mean, you're talking since the 20s, 30s, that this shit has been going on. Mm-hmm. And people have been, like you said, you know, punished in prisons and all this
lives
stuff.
Ruined.
Like, yeah, lives ruined. For what, you know?
And you know, black markets allow other kind of criminality to thrive.
Right.
So it's not like it starts and stops with, like, you know, a nice guy trying to sell weed and, like, a nice kid trying to buy it. You know, money on the black market, it's not in banks. And it often can be used to fund other things, human trafficking,
right.
You know, sex trade, all
and
of
that's
these.
That's what they
all
do,
of these
right.
Things. So part of it is, you know, I mean, Al Capone was Al Capone because of alcohol.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So part of this is also like, let's bring all this above ground, and it helps other issues go away.
Yeah, yeah.
And also another perspective, to another way to look at it, and I actually learned this from the former LA police commissioner, who is now a cannabis attorney. He's a great Rafael Bernardino, and he actually spoke at our event last week, and he's spoken there before.
How amazing is that?
But he actually correlated the rise in crime in the city of Los Angeles since 2013 with the police enforcing Proposition D, which came on board then, and actually using and diverting police for raiding and going after the industry,
really?
Instead of going after, you know, real criminals.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
it goes hand in hand.
Every cannabis operator is not perfect. There are people that need to be enforced against, mm-hmm. but ultimately it's a big waste of a lot of things, and I think that's how it affects every citizen.
Right. Right. Now, there are a lot of barriers to entry in this, and one of them is money, obviously, but the question is why. I mean, they make it so hard now with the licensing and everything that there's just a huge market in licenses, right? I mean, people buy,
this is California. These people have been fighting to be a legal part of a legal industry
for decades,
years.
Right.
These people have risked their lives and everything. I mean, even their kids' lives, their family members, whatever. They've lost. People have died trying just to be in this industry. And yeah, if you want to come in now, it's a little too late. You can't be like, you can, but it's like, you're not going to get the respect. You're not going to have the support really from the community.
Yeah, but this is still a Wild West type of thinking,
right,
you know, because
it's not going to be easy for you. And just because you have money, people recognize the new, I went to a party. that was for a magazine, I won't say.
Okay.
That was recently purchased by people who are like from rich Texas people who, you know, I don't even think they smoke weed.
Right.
So, I mean, you're going to have that side, but there's the other side of these people who've been fighting forever to be in the community, and they should get first.
Well, yeah, they should, you know, but what do you guys say, Elizabeth? I mean, do you think there's going to be a point where it'll be business as usual in this industry too, where anybody that wants to get in will be able to open up shop? Are we going to see that?
Well, it's California, so there are always going to be a lot of barriers to entry just to run a business. There's a lot of regulation here. I mean, ideally, I think you get the folks who have been in the industry for a long time, licensed, up and running, legit. They get their local and their state license. But I really hope, and I think Ruben can speak to this as a former small business owner, you know, there really is, we want to make an industry that is as inclusive as possible because, you know, you have, it's hard to, it, don't, you know, underestimate the size of the demand in California's market for new innovative products. So I think it's kind of that balance, you know, between your perspective, which is totally legitimate, mm-hmm. you know, let people in who have, you know, risk their lives,
right.
But also, you know, create space for people like Ruben and others.
I mean, 100%. A big reason why we started the task force last year was we saw these state laws coming down, and we knew there was a need to bring them into the city of Los Angeles to regulate the industry. But also, it was based upon the fact that LA has such a wonderful cottage industry, and it's the small businesses, and it's the innovation, mm-hmm. and also it's also, you know, a great vehicle, and you know, to for people of color. Women, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a big social equity piece when it comes to people that have been totally, their lives ruined by the war on drugs or the failed war on drugs or whatever you want to call it. But to answer your question in a roundabout way, it's a struggle because the you need a lot of money to get into the industry.
Running
your business in a regulated industry is much different than kind of the wild, wild west.
Yeah, like free enterprise and stuff because, yeah, they put a lot of regulations. You can't really compete the way you would in a free market. But I can understand that. I mean, it is drugs. It is controlled substances, whatever, you know.
Well, and, you know, part of the problem is that, you know, businesses often absorb these massive losses because if you're robbed, for example, we help businesses with their licensing. That's part of what Ruben and I do as part of our business. And, you know, we have a client who was robbed the other night, lost $250,000 mm-hmm. worth of their product.
Right.
Cannot call the police. Mm-mm. Has it on tape. Their security
system. But can't do anything about it.
Can't do anything about it.
And let me ask you this. What do they do with all the cash? Because the banks won't take that money, will they?
They make it rain.
Mm-hmm. They make it rain.
That's right. We make it rain.
Actually, Council President Wesson addressed this in a council meeting last week about trying to figure out banking in the city of Los Angeles. And I think that because I listened to his speech, he referred to it as people sleeping on $1 million mattresses.
Yeah, right.
For real.
Yeah.
They don't have a place to put their money.
Yeah, and they need a lot of protection, too, I would imagine, you know, safes and security in their homes and stuff.
I mean, it creates an unsafe. I mean, it just creates such a safety hazard for all these business owners and dispensary owners. And who's going to be the first bank? I mean, it would be that bank. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're gonna make so much money. It's
right,
ridiculous.
But it'd be
stupid.
But it would be breaking federal laws.
Yes, unfortunately.
Right.
There's that side.
So what are you guys gonna do now? I mean, so now it's beyond LA. Now, if the banks are not gonna cooperate here because they're afraid of repercussion from the federal level, what do you do? That's a big hurdle.
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot going on the federal level right now. I think I read an article, and I have to look back at it because I just glanced at it, but I think Senator Cory Booker introduced something today or yesterday for a legalization measure, a bill federally. I know that there was a coalition group, and actually a good friend of ours, Marvin Washington, ex-NFL player, put a group together, and they're actually suing the Department of Justice because it's not – I don't think the word is fair, but it's not constitutional that it's a Schedule I, still a Schedule I narcotic. You have, you know, also other protections moving through. It's a matter of time,
right?
But you know, again, good luck.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't know. Government just flashed in front of my eyes.
Well, here in California, you know, we have really actually great leadership on the banking issue. You know, John Chung, who is running for governor, with Gavin Newsom and Antonio Villaraigosa and Diane Easton, you know, all of these folks have cannabis on their radar. Mm-hmm. Chung is actually leading a working group that, Nicole Newbert, Ariel's law partner, sits on, you know, to try to figure out a way in California to do it. But I think, you know, once businesses have licenses and their financials start getting tracked by the state, you'll have banks that are like, we could see a way to do this.
Right.
Right, right. Wow. A lot of ifs and a lot of wishing there, right?
Yes.
A lot of hard work, too.
Yes.
Elizabeth and Ruben, tell us a little bit about the company that you have. You put together a firm, right? And tell us a little bit about that. People can also follow us. What's the name of your company?
We're Ceres Strategies, and so it's C-E-R-E-S Strategies.
Are you guys on Instagram?
No.
Insta what?
Insta who?
Sorry.
That's okay.
The task forces. Mm. LA Cannabis Task Force.
I think I follow you guys.
Right.
Yeah, the task forces. I mean, at this point, you know, what we saw was a real need for businesses to get some assistance in addition to their legal assistance just with navigating local government, trying to figure out how to do applications, what was needed. So, you know, we built out a business that helps businesses do that.
Right. And that's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like the first thing you wonder is, how do I even start, right? Where do I go? What is this? So, but that begs the question again, is there still room to get in now? But I guess not everybody has to get into a dispensary, right? I mean, there's so many marijuana or cannabis-related products that you can get into, and you can help people with that as well.
So this was one of the greatest hurdles in talking to local government and government in general is that they think dispensaries are the entire industry.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's the only forward-facing part of the industry. It's what people see. But I would say 90% of the industry is actually
behind the
manufacturers,
scenes, right.
Cultivators, distributors, lab testers, mm-hmm. delivery services. I mean, things that you wouldn't even see going on.
Right, and people making the packaging.
Then you have the ancillary businesses that are doing
everything else. And then with recreation, that will even grow even exponentially.
Yeah, like you know, I mean, like we said, just experiences of and tourism and
exactly now
events
events are amazing.
Everyone's
a cannabis event planner.
Yeah, you know,
we have my friend Molly Peckler, who's a world's first cannabis matchmaker. I mean, there is a place for everyone in this industry.
Yeah,
she's
right.
A cannabis matchmaker and a cannabis life coach.
Wow,
isn't that crazy?
It is, but that's the thing. I mean, there's something for everyone, you know.
Yeah, there are so many opportunities. So it's kind of like, you know, when we talk to local government, we try to remind them, like, think about avocados. They don't magically appear in stores.
Right.
And going to a store isn't the only way, one way to buy it.
Right.
You know, somebody has to grow it, move it, put it in the store, make sure it doesn't have E. coli, sell it. Maybe you have Amazon deliver your avocados. Maybe you go to a farmer's market. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how this works. It's not that mysterious.
Right.
In Nevada, one of the reasons they ran out of recreational weed was that there was nobody to deliver it to the dispensaries.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's wild.
Really?
No, they couldn't put it in cars and move it. It was against the law.
Yeah, right?
So, you know, you want to try to think through the whole supply chain.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of it.
So you guys have been doing this for a while. You're well versed in this whole field. The company's Ceres.
Like seriously.
Okay, Ceres. C-E-R-E-S Strategies. And so, okay, since it's hard to pronounce or to spell, at least for me.
I was thinking maybe we need to rebrand.
What does it mean?
Okay, so it's the Greek goddess of agriculture. And I was in Athens. One of my best friends lives in Athens. I was hanging out with her, and weed was just reclassified in Greece from, you know, a Schedule I, essentially, mm-hmm. to a medicinal drug. And I was hanging out in her living room. We were talking about it, and I was looking for a name for us.
Elizabeth was in Athens. We were trying to figure out a name. I suddenly got many texts of many, many Greek references, and I was like, I like this.
I love it.
Did you love Greece? Was it nice?
Yeah, I love everything about it.
Yeah, I studied abroad there. I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Oh, it's
I love
best.
Greece. It's amazing.
Well, we're looking at trying to open up a dispensary on Santorini.
Oh, my God, if you guys need any help with marketing.
This is what we need Instagram for.
Oh my gosh, I'm here for you.
Well,
thank
you. You see, you're forward looking. You're saying the hell with LA. Now we're moving overseas, right?
Well, it's a global industry.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. Well, so, I mean, do you guys see yourselves really making it big financially too in this industry? I mean, as far as what your plans are, what your vision, are you looking for that?
It's, you know what? It's disappointing to see that in this industry, people are really struggling, and people look at it through this veil of money, and that's actually, you know, I usually tell my clients or I tell people that's the number one pitfall, and cities do as well. They look at through this veil of money. It's a great way to set yourself up for failure, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you got to do the work. You have to, right. You know.
But how can it not be about money when it requires so much to
No, it's about money. But I'm saying that if people just are thinking about money
right,
all
if
the
you're
time,
going
they're
in
thinking about
this
money
industry
rather than
but not
just
all
to
the
make
time.
Money. You're going to fail. It's not. It's more than that. You have like it's a medicine, and if you're just going in looking at it just to profit off of sick people, that's not. I don't know. I think there's always going to be people like that.
So you're saying people should get into this industry and not make money because
people
are... No, I
never said that, but like there are just patients? Like there's going to be like just like in any industry, there are going to be people who don't care about the patient. They just care about the bottom line, and then right. You can see that through their product where they're skipping corners or they're, you know, however they're cutting costs because they want to make more of a profit. You know what I mean? Like there'll always be those people.
Right, but I don't think that's what we were talking about.
I'm just saying people aren't making as much money as you think.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I go to those dispensaries. I mean, these guys make like tons
but you have to.
Tons.
I know, but you have to realize they pay their lawyers. They pay the packaging. They pay like just to keep the lights on. I mean, everything costs money, and everything is so expensive because it's unregulated. There's, you know, people can just put a price on something.
But look, those expenses usually most businesses have, other than maybe some attorneys or consultants.
Well,
like
when I work at the dispensary, like you have to think about security. You know, like you have to pay the security. You know, you have to think about how are you going to build, like, so your dispensary is built. Like, we didn't sit behind a glass window.
But you're talking about a ton of money. I mean, did you see? You probably saw this documentary in Colorado where these people when they just started
in
$60,000 a day
in Breckenridge where they
it's $60,000 a day.
100%. Listen, there's a high demand. One of the reasons why you see sort of an artificially inflated market is because it hasn't been regulated. So coming in now, businesses in California are going to pay state tax and they're going to pay local tax.
Right.
That will eat up a lot of
revenue.
There
you go. You know, Wild West.
And then
right?
they're also going to be just like any other. They're going to have to pay for insurance for their employees. They're going to have to do everything like any other business does. Like even now when it's not like the dispensary I was working for, he's like, we're not even above the red line yet.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
You see how much money comes in and...
There's also one other issue that it's not like every other business because you can't write off your business expenses in the cannabis industry
not yet.
So actually the people's effective tax rates and then the way that they're getting hit is it's going to be much higher, and then on top of that with regulation,
so
prices are going to be dropping, and then the margins are going to get much tighter.
Now if the government doesn't recognize this as legal income, I mean, can they tax you for it, you know, the federal government?
So under to be fully compliant with federal taxes, there is a category that, you know, is unspecified, unspecific income that you got. You can put yourself in that category. The problem is it's a 50% tax, and there's no deductions allowed. So you can see where that's a disincentive. Also, you know, I think with this administration, there's a really serious risk of being on radar.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Of course. I mean, Jeff Sessions is out talking about, you know, the success of the DARE program, for heaven's sake.
Right. Good people don't smoke marijuana. Exactly. Yeah, so we're all shitty people here smoking marijuana.
Well, let's hope Jeff Sessions is out of there because I don't like him, period. I mean, the moment he came there. But then again, the guy at the top is the one that ultimately makes the decisions. And, you know, if we got a Jeff Sessions, we'll probably get a similar one. As long as we have this president, probably, right?
Call me crazy. I don't think, like, a military general and Jeff Sessions are going to go soft on pot anytime soon, right? I think Trump, you know, my impression of the president is that he's sort of agnostic about weed. Roger Stone is a huge ally and supporter for him, you know. So and Stone's an outspoken. He just spoke at a major event about a week ago. So, you know,
That's interesting you bring in a Roger Stone because I read his book called The Making of the President.
You should watch the next Netflix documentary.
Is really? That good? The Netflix one?
Yeah, it's really good.
Glanced over it.
It's
over
really
and over
good, and you're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, right?
Get him out of
know,
here. But, like,
I know.
You know, I like made a joke, and I should never have said this because I feel like it's my fault. But I was like, you know what? I would take Trump as president if we just legalized weed. And that's exactly what fucking happened. And you know what? I'm regretting it every single day. You know?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry, you guys.
Listen. Nobody knew how to the extent, and I don't think.
Which also is sad too, because veterans and people in the military need weed more than most of us. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they are only getting access to these.
Yeah, everybody needs weed, folks. I mean, we need a mellower world, I think, and a lot of people find it to be medicinal, and I think that's why it's worth it so much. You know. Ruben, tell people how they can find you, and then Elizabeth.
LACannabisTaskForce.org. Please, if you want to stay up with what's going on in the city of Los Angeles and get involved, please, please go and sign up, put your email. You'll get our email list. If you are so inclined, to become a member of the task force.
Okay. And what does that entail? I mean, so you sort of like provide, you do some service for...
So the way that I look at it, and so Elizabeth and I, we have our separate business, and we work with smaller cities. But in LA, it's so big that, you know, we don't take clients in Los Angeles. It's pooled advocacy. So it's almost like you're working for the group, for the association, for the greater good of the industry.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome. And Elizabeth, how can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at cerresstrategies.com, C-E-R-E-S, strategies.com.
Strategy.
Well, cerresstrategy.com.
Yeah. So, and the name of the company, Strategies. So you guys have to change some things around.
We may. On the other hand, maybe we'll can find us, maybe we'll work for you.
Yeah, right? There you go. Well, guys, you're full of information, a lot of fun.
Thank
you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Here's to we're not going to toast, but we could always pass a vaporizer around.
Yeah, for sure.
To seeing legalization and really normalization of this drug, so we can actually do anything we want with it without feeling that we're being chased for it. You know.
I also wanted to one more quick little plug.
Quickly.
The task force is, we're going to have an online petition to deal with these local regulations in the city of Los Angeles that we're going to be rolling out pretty soon.
Awesome. There's
going to be a hearing coming up in the next couple of weeks in the city of LA, where a public hearing where they're going to be going over the proposed regulations, and we're going to have a march, a rally, and a press conference on City Hall.
Please go
to our website.
What's the date of that?
It hasn't been announced yet, and they'll announce it. I'll tell you, but
awesome.
It's 72 hours before, so you only have 3 days' notice. But we're, you know, preparing for that right now.
Awesome. Well, thanks to you guys, we're gonna have, like I said, legal industry and everything, and that makes me feel good, you know, because I come from an era. Like I'm a fucking alien or something, right? But I grew up at a time when it wasn't this free at all. It was the total opposite, yet we smoked the shit out of us. So anyway, guys, thank you so much.
Thanks
for joining us. You're amazing. Rachel, thank you as
always.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.